You're listening to PodMini.
Hello again, and welcome back for another dose of the nonsense we call Not Your Mother's Goose, where we ask for a second opinion about whether eating apples randomly gifted to you by strange old ladies you've never met could pose a health hazard. I'm Topher Goggin. Coming up today, we'll head under the sea with the Little Mermaid, remind you of everything you've forgotten about the Fox and the Hound, and get the details on Little Red Riding Hood's new movie deal in the news. First, though, your flying carpet is now boarding, as we're off to Agrabah to check out the one and only Aladdin. The story of Aladdin is part of the famous Arabian Nights collection, along with such well-known tales as Ali Baba and the 40-minute wait at the DMV, and Sinbad the stand-up comedian. Aladdin starts out as a poor ne'er-do-well street urchin that spends his days annoying his fellow citizens, lying, and taking money out of other people's pockets. Basically, he's a U.S. senator in a fez. Unfortunately, in Aladdin's world, this is not a very lucrative lifestyle. Things take a surprising turn for the better, however, when Aladdin's friendly neighborhood evil sorcerer dupes him into retrieving an enchanted lamp from an ill-tempered magic cave. Along the way, Al runs into some minor issues with the cave's security system, which more or less tries to eat him, but he dinks and dodges his way to safety. He then tells the sorcerer finders keepers and holds on to the loot himself, ending the day plus one in the lamp department. And still alive. Not bad. Aladdin takes his new lamp home, and while trying to figure out where to screw in the light bulb, ends up rubbing the thing and causing a genie to magically appear. The wisecracking magic man promptly informs Aladdin that he may have already won the chance to appear in a joke about a hard-of-hearing genie, and recommends that he wish for a 12-inch pianist. Aladdin, however, is more concerned with trying to get into the billowing pants of his favorite princess, and decides this would best be accomplished by wishing to become a handsome elephant-riding prince. With a 12-inch pianist. Of course, things are never quite so easy. While Aladdin is putting the moves on Her Highness and flying her all over on a magic carpet, the disgruntled evil sorcerer is still around. It's only a matter of time before he connects the new love muffin prince in town to the little twerp that pinched his magic lamp a while back. The sorcerer steals the lamp back and puts the genie to work on some new wishes. Wishes that do not exactly make Aladdin's well-being a high priority. Having been around the block once or twice, Aladdin recognizes that the sorcerer's tactics were not exactly fair. He promptly turns the case over to law enforcement, knowing that the resources of the local police and district attorney will surely be more than adequate to redress the injustices committed by a powerful sorcerer with a genie at his disposal. Now, admittedly, some of your less respected editions of this story do have Aladdin prevailing over the sorcerer by other means. These methods include placing some wishes with a second backup genie, and you should know that FEMA recommends all Americans keep a backup genie in their disaster preparedness kit. Also, sometimes Aladdin wins by convincing the sorcerer to wish to become a genie himself, and then imprisoning him in his own lamp. Take your pick. And with that, let's move on and check the news. Good evening, and welcome to the Nottingham Nightly News, where everything is true, unless we made it up. Let's take a look at tonight's top stories. Humpty Dumpty completes physical therapy. Amish fairy godmother turns Ferrari into horse-drawn carriage. And tonight from Hollywood, Little Red Riding Hood signs movie deal. Back in the news once again, Little Red Riding Hood's never-ending attempts to extend her 15 minutes of fame ramped up another notch yesterday, as the ubiquitous damsel in distress announced that she has inked a movie deal. Little Red, who just months ago tried to resurrect her stardom by releasing a hip-hop single titled Little Red into Hood, featuring Bo Peep with Old Mother Hubbard, confirmed through her publicist that she's signed on to co-star with an aging Sylvester Stallone in Marvel's latest superhero movie, Captain Prostate, Duty Calls. The movie will mark Little Red's latest attempt to reestablish her fleeting stardom. She moved to Hollywood 2 years ago after garnering national attention by getting eaten by a wolf, then immediately made more headlines after being arrested for drunk driving in Beverly Hills mere days after her arrival. She was eventually sentenced to 45 minutes of looking at a picture of a jail, plus some community service plucking chin hairs off retired movie stars at the Burbank Botox Clinic. Time now to go to break. If you've ever wanted to rub-a-dub-dub in the tub, but just couldn't figure out how to cram your butcher and baker in there, here's your solution.
Hi, I'm Candlestick Maker. Let's just go with Roy. You know what used to bug me? Small bathtubs. You tried to cram a butcher and a baker in there with you, and there was hardly any room left for the Barbie. Barbecue grill, that is. Like they say in the movies, we're gonna need a bigger tub. But I found the answer.
That's right, Roy. Rub-A-Dub Tubs is your one-stop shop for all the world's biggest bathtubs. Check out our tub of the month, the Bathmaster 2500 XL. Known as the Cadillac of bathtubs, this spacious model comes with a stainless steel gooseneck faucet, a drain, plus a mount for a 64-inch TV and a pony keg. You can host a party for eight and wash your hair all in one evening. With free delivery and installation, you'll be singing Rubber Ducky with the whole neighborhood by the end of the day. Your satisfaction is certain, as Rub-A-Dub Tubs is the home of the All Suds, No Duds guarantee. Call us today. And remember, if you find a tub for less, we'll bathe in it ourselves.
Thanks to my cousins Pat and Sally for lending their vocal talents there. They've both done tons of performing. Sally especially has starred in every theater production you can imagine. But I've got to believe that getting the chance to play a bathtub salesperson really fulfills a lifelong dream for her. Thanks, Sal. Now back to some more top stories. Bremen Town musicians launch exclusive SiriusXM channel. Already have four listeners. PETA protests popping of weasels. And our breaking news, not so little Tommy Tucker, now little once again, cuts carbs and drops 125 pounds on Atkins diet. White bread and butter may be delicious, but if you're looking to maintain that slim and trim figure, you might want to shut it down after your third or fourth loaf of the day. That's the word from famed vocalist Little Tommy Tucker, who watched his weight balloon during his Wonder Bread-sponsored Toast of the Town tour last year. But that has all changed, as Tucker's publicist announced today that Tommy has ditched the carbs entirely and dropped 125 pounds on the Atkins diet. It's all protein now, she said, noting that Tucker is also doing Zumba, CrossFit, Insanity, Jazzercise, Sweating to the Oldies with Richard Simmons, and that PBS show with the lady in the tutu who sits in a folding chair. No word yet on how he plans to update his trademark song, though, as nothing much seems to rhyme with cauliflower. And here's an additional story we're following. Las Vegas Resort hires Big Bad Wolf. Officials from MGM Resorts announced a series of cost-cutting measures at their Las Vegas properties yesterday, but none caught the world's attention quite like their plan for the destruction of the Maverick Casino and Hotel. The Maverick won't be obliterated by way of a traditional implosion when it makes way next year for the construction of an Antarctic-themed mega-resort, plus a CVS. Instead, officials announced that they've contracted with the Big Bad Wolf to huff and puff and just blow the whole place to the ground. This is going to save us millions, commented MGM Vice President Doug Rufus, who pointed out that the project should be easy as the Maverick is not made of bricks. We just offered him a couple of pulled pork sandwiches from the Luxor Buffet, and he asked us where he should sign. The Little Mermaid. In the book version of Not Your Mother's Goose, remember you should definitely pick up a copy, or 10, The Little Mermaid appears in the Stories You Don't Remember section we've been visiting here occasionally on the show. Now that probably seems a little odd, since this is a fairly mainstream, well-known plot at this point. Except in terms of the real version of that plot, it's not. You likely know the main points of The Little Mermaid, once again thanks to your friend Walter Disney. We've basically got a mermaid who wants to become a human because she's got the hots for Mr. Prince up on the land. Regrettably, though, she fails the human citizenship test when she's unable to name at least three members of the cast of Baywatch. And the lack of lower appendages might have been a problem, too. Instead, she goes on Craigslist and finds herself a betentacled sea witch who offers to turn her into a human for today's low price of her voice. The witch also adds the condition that the mermaid will need to get the prince to fall in love with her if she wants to complete the transformation into a human. Armed with a set of feet, but no vocal cords, the mermaid heads ashore to tackle the task of silently wooing his studliness. And somehow this almost works, at least until the prince gets tired of playing charades on every date. Eventually, though, the prince falls for another woman that actually talks occasionally, and who may or may not be the sea witch using the mermaid's stolen voice. Things are not going so hot for our mermaid. Now here's where you need to check your notes. If you prefer the Disney version, a singing crab, a fish, and a moron seagull come to the rescue just in time to prevent the prince from marrying the sea witch. The mermaid gets her voice back, marries the prince herself, and they live happily ever after. But it turns out that old Walt used about a full gallon of Mr. Clean to spruce up the real story. If you check out Hans Christian Andersen's original, the prince goes through with the original wedding, and the mermaid just dies and dissolves into seafoam. So that's a great story, Hans. Really uplifting. The only thing I can think of is maybe the mermaid got made into one of those cans of Dow scrubbing bubbles so her remains could be kept in a cupboard under the sink. And while we're on the subject of stories you don't remember, let's throw in the town mouse and the country mouse. This is the story where the highfalutin town mouse goes to visit his country cousin and declares everything out in the country to be dull as hell. He then invites the country mouse to come see him in the big city so he can show off. The country mouse arrives, and they promptly get chased by a big dog. The country mouse decides that the city sucks. This is the most boring fairy tale ever. Fox and the Hound. Todd and Copper, a bromance between a fox and a dog. Sure, why not? Let's go. Our story begins when Todd the Fox gets adopted by an old lady whose vision is so bad that she can't tell the difference between a fox and a puppy. She also doesn't know how to spell Todd, since she just goes with T-O-D. She lives next door to a mountain man named Amos Slade, which makes him sound like he should either be a rock star or an old-school Supreme Court justice. Justice Slade has an old fart tracking dog named Chief, whose nose has deteriorated to the point that pretty much the only smell he can track is farts. It wasn't me, honest. Slade decides that it's time for a canine upgrade and picks out a new hound dog puppy named Copper for himself. Shortly after Copper's arrival, Todd wanders next door to say hello. The two of them hit it off, and only later does Copper find out that his job, his only job, is to hunt for Todd. Whoops. Next time, read the contract a little more carefully. A few days later, Mr. Slade notices Todd swinging by for a playdate and sets his tracking team off to catch him a fox. Copper corners Todd almost immediately. He tries to let his buddy go, but Chief inconveniently chooses this moment to be the first time in years for his nose to actually work, and picks up Todd's trail himself. Of course, smelling is one thing, chasing is another. While Chief is in hot pursuit, he wipes out, breaks a leg, and maybe dies. Depends on whose version you're reading. Well, that and the fact that at Chief's geezer dog energy levels, dead and not dead look basically the same. In just a small overreaction, Copper then blames Todd for everything bad that ever happened to Chief. Copper and Slade set off to kick Todd's ass, forcing the old lady to move Todd into a protected game preserve. That works for about 5 minutes. Then Todd again finds himself on the run from a Slade and Copper poaching expedition, as security at this game preserve, not too impressive. Equally unimpressive, however, are Slade and Copper's stealth hunting skills. First, their sneak attack attracts the attention of a nearby bear. Then, as the grizzly starts mauling Copper, Slade the hunting wizard catches himself in one of his Todd traps. Copper seriously might want to hop on LinkedIn and take a look for a new employer. While Slade is trying to find the trap release button, Todd the adolescent fox emerges and saves the day by opening up a can of whoop-ass on a fully grown bear in one of your more plausible fight matchups. Todd is then rewarded for his heroism when an injured Slade comes up and tries to shoot him anyway. Copper, however, is not going to have this, and he stands over Todd's injured body to take the bullet, Secret Service style. Slade, of course, just blasts away, figuring he can buy himself a new dog once this stupid fox is out of the picture. Okay, not really. Slade doesn't shoot, and Copper drags the old man home so the wacky lady next door can nurse him back to health. Knowing that his friendship with Copper can't continue, except maybe as a CBS sitcom on Monday nights, Todd stays behind in the game preserve and shacks up with a new lady friend. If they have a kid, let's just hope they add some extra D's to the name to even things out. Lady Godiva. Our last story of the show has everything. Well, actually, it has two things. Taxes and naked people. 50-50 ain't bad. Long before the Tea Party cornered the market on complaining about high taxes, there was only one name in anti-tax demonstrations, and that was Lady Godiva. Prior to getting into the business of making really expensive chocolates, Mrs. Godiva was the world's first and most creative tax protester. According to the story, her husband, Barack Godiva, was taxing the walnuts out of the good folks of Coventry, and Lady Godiva didn't like it. Thus, in an act sure to lower taxes, or at least raise public morale, Lady G took off riding a horse through town, buck naked. Mr. Godiva turned into Ronald Reagan by the next morning. Today, it seems this particular method of tax protest has kind of fallen out of favor. And that's disappointing, because I bet there's a lot of folks in nudist colonies who think the alternative minimum tax is a total pain in the rump. On the other hand, maybe that's for the best. I haven't called any pollsters to confirm, but I'm just not sure the world is ready for Mitch McConnell galloping through the streets of DC in the buff. Somebody remind him to watch out for the saddle horn. We'll finish up, as we often do, by firing up Rapunzel's jukebox. Our buddy Tony D'Amico, who you heard a couple of shows ago on The Charming Wanderer, is back with another old-time classic. You know the original Sugar Shack by Jimmy Gilmer and the Fireballs, but now we'll visit the obvious fairy tale Sugar Shack, and that, of course, is a Hansel and Gretel version. Everybody turn up the volume and get out your stones and breadcrumbs, put those in the slot of Rapunzel's jukebox, because here's Tony D'Amico with Sugar Shack.
We found a creepy little shack around the back. All gingerbread and candy, a sugar shack. We got taken for a walk way out deep in the woods. Birds ate our breadcrumbs, it wasn't good. Now we're lost and we gotta get back from this sugar shack. Don't eat us in this sugar shack. See, there's this blind old lady, she's living there. A black pointy hat, she gives us quite a scare. We're gonna tell her that we're skinny, eat her eggs and hash, stuff her in the oven, haul off all her stash. We'll be filthy rich by the time we get back. Go from this sugar shack. Get Gretel from this sugar shack. Big money from this sugar shack. Oh yeah, from this sugar shack.
It's a different version of Sugar Shack, here to wrap up another episode of Not Your Mother's Goose. Please remember to check out Tony D'Amico on iTunes and pick up some of his real music. That's D'Amico. And Tony gets a big thank you again for all of his help here on the show. With that, we've reached the end of another episode, but we have plenty of stories still to tell. Come back next time when we'll double down on snoozing princesses with both Snow White and Sleeping Beauty, remind you of the story of John Henry, and learn all about the Headless Horseman's upcoming Sesame Street appearance. That's it for today. Thanks again so much for listening. I'm Topher Goggin. I hope to have you back again soon. Remember, the goose is loose. I'll see you on down the path on another episode of Not Your Mother's Goose.
You've been listening to a Podmany original production. Thank you. Podmany. Thank you. Thanks for listening.